welcome back to the latest episode of the Coin Journal podcast. Today, we are talking with the head of crypto insights at Bybit, the global cryptocurrency exchange. That's Charmin Ho. How are you doing, Charmin?
Hi, Dan. Nice to meet you. I'm doing great today.
Good, good. Thank you for joining us. So, you caught our eye when you published a report. So Bybit collaborated with Nansen to report kind of on a quite a wide ranging report on the state of crypto really in July, and you had a part to play in that report, right?
Yeah, so actually we do these reports every month, and we generally touch on the general on-chain, off-chain sentiments and the state of the NFT ecosystem as well, dive deep into the latest industry updates.
Cool, cool. And what were some of the big insights that came up in this report, which would have been July, so I guess 2 weeks ago?
Yep. So for July, apart from the general on-chain, off-chain sentiments and the general industry update for NFTs,
so let's talk about,
we actually touched on smart
second.
Money and what
for
we have been doing in the past month and during this
bear market.
You have
been able to, over the last while, lock up your ETH in a staking contract for Ethereum 2.0 ahead of the merge, which, as we know now, is coming in September 15th. So the upside, obviously, is you earn yield, and the downside is you lose access to this Ethereum. So along came Lido Finance, and they offered these staked ETH tokens, which essentially were tokens to prove that you had locked up your ETH, and then you can now trade, buy, sell, trade this staked ETH alternative, which is meant to trade at one-to-one. Now, during the big contagion crisis, there was obviously a massive run for liquidity, and Celsius, who were one of the players in trouble, have a lot of staked ETH, and they needed liquidity quickly, and it ended up selling at a huge discount and was part of the reason that they ended up going down the tubes. But you've noticed some interesting developments here regarding the staked ETH arbitrage trade, is that correct?
Yeah, so I think firstly, just to break this down, right, talking about the staked ETH and ETH discount. For some context, I guess staked ETH refers to a cryptocurrency token, right, representing, like you said, one unit of ETH that has been staked or deposited and locked up in support of the upgraded network. So the staked ETH and ETH discount and the Celsius demise actually share, in my opinion, a bi-directional causal relationship, right? In other words, the latter actually led to and caused the former just as much as the former led to and caused the latter, right? So I guess for more context and really diving deep into it, you know, as the crypto market melted down and Luna USD imploded, I guess people realized the importance of holding liquid assets over illiquid ones, right? And this led to a drawdown of over 80% in liquid ETH in Curve's finance staked ETH pool. So you couple this with the market dump of staked ETH to cover the margin requirements by institutions like Celsius and 3AC, and you really just get an immense selling pressure on staked ETH. Yeah, so I guess if we want to zoom in onto the Celsius case study, I guess let's work with maybe hypotheticals, I guess, to get a better idea of how the staked ETH and ETH discount led to the eventual downfall. So, I mean, imagine you are a lender and you have assets and liabilities. So, for example, the assets are 100% staked ETH, and liabilities will be 100% in customer deposits in ETH. And ETH tanks 20%, and now your customers want their ETH back, but you only have staked ETH. So in the end, you would have to sell your staked ETH for ETH in order to honor the withdrawals. And one place to do that will be the staked ETH and ETH Curve pool. But here comes the problem, right? So the staked ETH pool is a two-sided pool that pairs the staked ETH with ETH. And when all the ETH is drained, there's just no one else to sell this to. And flowing from this, your staked ETH will become technically worthless, right? It becomes an illiquid asset with no buyers. And I think that's exactly what happened to Celsius, which they used their users' ETH as collateral to leverage on Lido. And customers want to withdraw the money and because they are worried Celsius cannot pay, and you know, Celsius has assets but no liquidity, and they end up having to sell the staked ETH, thereby causing the staked ETH to deviate even further from ETH price. So eventually, this is a move that I guess killed themselves as well, and unfortunately, and Celsius also has its staked ETH locked up as collateral elsewhere. So it could get margin called if staked ETH declines more in value. And it's something that they are causing themselves, which is quite unfortunate in my opinion.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. So it's just like this massive liquidity crisis, I guess a run on the bank, for lack of a better word. But what I'm kind of curious about is when, because we're very comfortable in saying that staked ETH will be redeemable for ETH at a one-to-one pricing eventually, right? It's just a liquidity issue when it trades at a discount.
Yeah. But at the same time, I guess it's still a fine line to play.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
Staked ETH is not as liquidable as ETH.
Like, crypto is still a pretty good efficient market, and you've talked about arbitrage opportunities in the space, the wider space, right?
Well, I guess definitely that's there are opportunities for arbitrage trades, right? I mean, the main idea of arbitrage actually refers to the simultaneous purchase and selling of an asset in different markets to make a profit from the slight difference. And I think then you must know quite a bit about that as well. So in terms of crypto, I think arbitrage trading can be enticing to investors and traders as it presents a relatively low risk as compared to trading based on speculation. But with that said, there's many types of arbitrage strategies that are used depending on the situation and flexibility of funds possessed, right, by an individual trader. And hence, I would say there are definitely still opportunities if you play it right.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, because people forget, I think, sometimes how young cryptocurrency is. Like, the stock market's been around forever, whereas, like, crypto, I mean, Bitcoin was only invented in 08, so it still is quite an inefficient market in a lot of cases. So it's not surprising that you are still seeing so many arbitrage opportunities. So maybe let's just change tack a little bit here. And because you also, in your report, talk about NFTs. What do you think? Obviously, we've had kind of 6 months of pretty brutal price action. A lot of NFTs have completely collapsed. What do you think about the health of the NFT ecosystem in general?
Yep. So I guess, as mentioned in our report, the NFT ecosystem seems to actually still have slowly picked up its pace and made some recovery despite this bear market. So despite the general market sentiment, it did not really sway the floor prices of NFT. And more interestingly, our report revealed that the number of selling wallets was consistently lower than buying wallets. And this suggests that selling pressure did not give in to market volatility. So I guess what we can draw from this is that it indicates a rather healthy and sustainable industry landscape, despite what many may think of, like, all the NFT projects crashing.
Because NFT space really is getting a lot of criticism for getting out of control. Do you think, like, looking back now at the massive bull run and all the crazy, you know, Bored Ape Yacht Club going to, I can't even remember what price they were, but some crazy numbers at their, like, do you think the hysteria and do you think it all got a little bit out of control?
Well, I guess, firstly, I would like to say that it's important to note that the NFT sector isn't a monolithic one, right? And neither it's a static one. So although most people associate NFTs with PFPs, which is profile pictures, like Bored Ape Yacht Club, and maybe like even CryptoPunks, like, the truth is that the space is so much more than that. You know, while it may be true that there was some semblance of speculative hysteria within the NFT markets, especially during the bull run that inflated all these projects and floor prices, I mean, this state hysteria is, you have to note that it's concentrated mainly within the PFP projects. And And these PFP projects ultimately have little to no true utility. And even if some of them had, they were mainly promises for the future, right? Or P2E NFTs. So I guess in our report, we mentioned this as well. And our data further reinforced how the, you know, the NFT 500, the top 500 NFTs and the blue chip 10 indexes that are dominated by profile pictures and P2E projects. They have just corrected really from their inflated values, you know, this current cycle.
The profile picture NFTs get, and it's always the profile picture NFTs that seem to be the ones going for millions and millions of dollars, or that were going for millions and millions of dollars during the bull run. But yeah, like you say, it's it really is only a small part of not only NFTs, but art NFTs. So yeah, it's definitely worth pointing out. So perhaps just to change tact a little bit, because I know you seem to be very into gaming, right? And GameFi, is that correct?
Yeah, I do. I do take a keen interest in the GameFi, the P2E space, and as well as the NFT space, you know, like we were talking about just now. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. There's room for NFT in so many different areas, right? I mean, the NFT space currently even not, you know, is a multivariate and dynamic one, right? And we are still now moving away from beyond mere PFPs, you know, as utilities for NFTs. You know, currently there are more new forms of innovations like soulbound tokens or social NFTs, music NFTs, and on top of the whole GameFi NFTs, right? And I just wanted to point out as well, you know, just maybe taking a sidetrack as well. In our reports, we have actually found that art NFTs, you know, like that comprises of art block projects or Murakami Flower and more, they actually have outperformed most other projects since May of this year. So I think that's an interesting point to note. And as it indicates that the NFT space is actually constantly changing and it's so diverse in nature. And yeah, that's one thing I would like to point out. Yeah.
That is quite surprising since the start of May. So do you think like the GameFi space is healthier than a lot of other sectors of crypto?
I think it will be a bit difficult to judge whether, you know, the GameFi space is healthier compared to the other areas of crypto. I mean, they're all very different and they are all constantly changing, constantly growing in their own ways, right? I think it's just one aspect of crypto. But if we want to zoom into the GameFi space or the P2E space, I mean, it's definitely an intriguing and interesting one, right? With so much room to grow, you know? We are able to learn so many lessons from the first wave of P2E games, right, that have passed. And I think we are on to the second wave that will be coming up soon.
You mentioned there like the first wave of games and they proved unsustainable. A lot of them went under. What do you think it was about them that proved them go under? And do you think the second wave, do they have more of a chance, or what do you expect to see there?
Well, for me, I think we are able to learn so many lessons from this first wave and whether they are unsustainable and why they fail and, you know, what they did great and what should be improved on. And I guess when we talk about the first wave of P2E games, I guess a popular example is Axie Infinity, right? After all, they were the ones who led the first wave, you know, into its all-time high or in terms of user base and price performance. So I think we also dive deep into the fall of Axie in one of our deep dive articles some time back, and we really explored what the next generation of P2E games could learn from them. And just to share one major takeaway from the decline of Axie and many other P2E games during the first wave is just their inability to keep up with the cyclical nature of its tokenomics. So when tokens are minted, it adds to the total supply of tokens in the ecosystem. And so to control this supply, mechanisms really have to be put in place to remove the tokens that are in the ecosystem such that it will not lead to a decrease in demand or value of the tokens. So these mechanisms are called sink or burning mechanisms. And just adding to this, many a times these economies, they fail to keep up with their expanding user growth, and it eventually leads to an oversupply for their gaming token, which with insufficient burning mechanisms, right? So I guess in the case of Axie, their burning mechanism would be the breeding of Axies, which is the monsters that are used in gameplay. And unfortunately for them, just one sink mechanism is proved to be insufficient in controlling the growing supply of their tokens.
Okay, interesting. So you think it's largely like a tokenomics-based problem. And are we seeing with new games and games being developed for this next wave, like you say, are they addressing this problem? Are they taking a different approach? Or do you think they will if they haven't yet?
I think they should. And I guess they will. I mean, because like I said, you know, there's so much to learn from through the first wave and all the reasons why they are unsustainable and why they failed. Like, I'm sure many people have done their critiques on these games, and they have pointed out certain mechanisms or certain things that did not work out for them. And definitely the game creators for the next wave should take these criticisms into mind and, you know, hopefully be able to come up with a more sustainable and fun P2E game in the future.
Okay, interesting. So what I'm interested with here is that, like, you're talking NFTs, you're talking GameFi. Like, it seems to be such a wide-ranging, you seem to cover so many topics. Like, what exactly is your role at Bybit, if you want to give, like, a little background about yourself?
I head the Crypto Insights team at Bybit. So we actually produce research-backed content on many different areas in crypto, right? So we have our L1, L2 developments that we come out with every week, just on the latest updates in the L1, L2 industry. We do the same for DeFi. And definitely, if there are certain major updates in the space, we would do a deep dive, a data-backed dive into the latest happenings, I would say. So we actually cover quite a broad range of segments on our Bybit blog, and it's, you know, free for all the public to read.
Yeah, no, it seems like such an interesting role. I mean, I'm kind of into all things crypto, so it definitely interests me. And Bybit in general, right, it's a derivatives-focused exchange. Is that kind of separates them from the other, like, why derivatives, I guess? And have there been any interesting developments there over the last 6 months as the markets turned?
I think we would like to point out that Bybit did start with derivatives, and that was what our core strength has been in. But, you know, we still possess a full suite of tools to attend to all crypto needs. And, you know, we have tools like spot trading, where we do mining and staking through Bybit Earn, and we have our own NFT marketplace as well. So, yeah, it's really a full suite of tools that users can make use of.
Okay, interesting. And you guys obviously have these great reports that people can get an insight into, which is a cool little feature for the crypto nerds like me. So what about yourself? Like, when did you get into crypto?
Well, my crypto journey began when I first gained interest in crypto through the discovery of the P2E game, actually, Axie Infinity, the one that we've just talked about. And, you know, I've always loved playing games, and I was really thrilled to hear how there was a game where you can actually earn money through playing. So I started researching on it more, and I guess through that, I dived deeper into crypto. And, you know, to be very honest, I was in a completely different industry prior to this. I actually used to be a preschool teacher, and I only dabbled in crypto on the side. So, yeah, but I mean, after learning more and diving deeper into the space, I guess I was really intrigued by the endless opportunities that crypto has to offer. You know, I was especially drawn in by the fact that To me, crypto seems like a rather fair space, and opportunities are given to anyone regardless of social background, and as long as they're willing to grab it, you know, I think that was just the thing that drew me in.
Wow, that's fascinating. So you're a preschool teacher and you went in through gaming. That's very cool. So you've always just liked games in general. Like, did you play before crypto? Did you play like Fortnite and all the battle royale games and all those big like non-crypto games?
Yeah, I guess I did take part quite a bit in the Web2 gaming space as well. And you know, it's a rather intense and mature one, right? And you know, there's so much to learn, you know, from that Web3 games can learn from Web2 games, you know. I think one rather popular and controversial game that I was recently interested in, not sure if you heard about it, is called Mobile Legends. So actually much of their revenue was generated through the purchase of skins. And to be honest, I think many people, you know, like me, we just fall victim to an endless purchase of these skins that are purely for aesthetic purposes. And, you know, I always think to myself how great it would be if we could turn these skins into NFTs or introduce some kind of NFT mechanics to this skin, where the skin that I will purchase is only mine, you know, and mine only. And I just thought that would have been really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that's such a cool way, the way like you were playing games, you saw a problem, you saw how it could possibly be more efficient, and then you came across crypto and said, okay, maybe the blockchain can help this. So, I mean, I think that right there, that little anecdote about how you got into the industry is kind of a perfect argument for why crypto can hopefully make so many aspects of society better down the road. Obviously, we've got a long way to go. Sometimes everyone can kind of focus on prices and volatility and all this a little bit too much, but that's definitely a cool little story about how, like you say, hopefully it can make a lot of aspects of society a little fairer, a little more democratic and accessible to all. So maybe just before we finish up, we have like I keep saying, it's been a pretty bad year in terms of a lot of projects have gone under, prices have collapsed, but we have, and I know your report focuses on July, we have seen a bit of a bounce back in the last 6 weeks. This is the same in the stock market, kind of all across the economy a little bit, things looking hopefully a little more positive. But the big question, I know it's kind of impossible to answer, but I'm curious to your thoughts. Do you think that this little bounce back is a signal that, you know, we've got better things ahead, or is it just a brief rally and we're going to continue a downtrend and we haven't hit the bottom of the bear market yet?
Well, I guess like you pointed out as well, this is a pretty, we don't want to speculate too much, right? For our report released last month, you know, while the general crypto price jumped, we also noticed a recovery in terms of trading volume and futures open interest, right? And, you know, overall, I guess we saw widespread optimism regarding the price rebound. And, you know, with such solid support through the trading volume, we actually interpret this rebound quite positively. But I would still like to point out that we do have some reservations that it's a trend reversal, you know, because we still notice strong inflows of stablecoins into exchanges and a continuingly shrinking fiat stablecoin supply. So I guess this signals a continual capital flight from the crypto space. And I guess our thesis is that if the cryptocurrency rebounds, it stems from the incumbent players in the space. And I think we have yet to see a bull market coming. So I guess this is what we saw in July. But I would like to say we do have more information now. And I guess we'll cover it more in more detail in our coming report for August. The new report is coming out this week. Next week. And we did notice some interesting preliminary findings. So I can just share some of them with you. First, we actually saw the fiat stablecoin supply decrease to a lesser extent than previously, which is definitely a positive indicator. And secondly, we also noticed that the BTC correlation with NASDAQ dropped significantly to 0.32. And now it rebounded at an elevated level. So Yeah, we'll just have to see what else comes, and you can stay tuned to seeing our report in full next week.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, that two really cool points there. Yeah, so I'm surprised the correlation with Bitcoin and Nasdaq is so low, 0.32. That's crazy, and I guess good news on the stablecoin front as well with the supply. But yeah, I'll definitely I'll be looking out for the August report. And for any listeners who want to dig into the full report between Bybit and Nansen for July, I'll link that in the description, and I'll update it then next week, Charmin, once the August one's out. So yeah, thank you for joining us today, and some interesting points there, and yeah, looking forward to seeing your report for August.
Yep, thanks so much, Dan. I think it's a pleasure, you know, chatting with you, and looking forward to more opportunities to working with you closely in the future.